Issue around the act that establishes FIFA, which we were told, I think, earlier, last year in last year's presentation, that it is established under ICC Act. We just want more elaboration on that. And since FIFA is it's a new establishment following the matter of Summer and Kuna, we would like to be informed about the status and key aspects of the corporate plan, and added to that is the progress on its programs thus far since its establishment. So I think the presentation could put more emphasis on those issues. That would be inclusive of other issues that you had prepared to present to us. Thank you very much. And may we welcome the minister and allow him to present to us. Thank you.
Chairperson, the Honourable Coleman. Honourable members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for the interesting portfolio committee's taking in both small business development and the progress of FIFA. I'm delighted, Chairperson, to advise that I am joined by the Chairperson of the FIFA Board, Lorenzo, who I think members of the committee will know, by the CEO of FIFA, Mr. Makuva, as well as one of the senior executive members of the IDC, Mr. Mir. I also have Director General, and you have had the opportunity of being introduced to her at the last meeting, and officials of the department in FIFA. I want to say, Chair, that I think you've put it well in your opening remark about the importance of small business. It has, I think as you've recognized, enormous potential to help us achieve our employment and our development goals. And of course, when we talk of small business, we include in that remit tiny little businesses, the micro-enterprises, in the survival sector, right up to established, long-standing, often by profitable small enterprises. We talk about owner-driven businesses in the private sector, and we also talk about cooperatives and other forms of social enterprise. And what our experience has shown is that small businesses often have enormous flexibility. Because it's so small, because the owner or the members of the legal form are so intimately involved in the management, they can move quickly. We recognize that they're often the first point of entry for young entrepreneurs and new entrepreneurs to come into the economy. And in some sectors, not everywhere, but in some sectors, their labor absorbing capacity is above average. So for these many other reasons, small business is important. I think from my experience also, Chairperson and members of the committee, public policy matters. For small businesses, public policy matters. Government support schemes range from what economists call supply side, things like support, funding, technical issues like marketing or the development of business plans, incubation and so on, to the demand side. And the demand side is things like procurement, helping create markets for small business enterprises to sell their goods and services. I'm struck, Chairperson, even though today we look at CIFA and we look specifically at its corporate plan, at how extensive the state's support for the small business sector is. Many national departments have programs that support small business. They range from the well-known programs of the DDI, but they also programs in the Department of Science and Technology, innovation programs, in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, for small farmers, but farmers also, in many cases, businesses, and many of them obviously small. Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. I can run through a number of different national government departments in addition to the Economic Development Department. Provinces, all nine provinces have programs that directly or indirectly support small business. And at local government level, at least the main metros have dedicated programs. In an initial scoping, just for the current financial year, the announced plans of just two national departments and six provinces, in other words, not everyone, just two national departments and six provinces, accounted for some 2.8 billion rand of planned spending on small business. Some programs go beyond disbursement. They help to build capacity. One example the committee will know of is EDD's own program, partnership program, for the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, where it identified 100 young people with financial training. They being upgraded, the skills have been upgraded, they're being made work ready, and they're being placed with small businesses. And that's one example of many across the state. So the point I'd like to emphasize then is that the extent of state support is significant. But it is a but in this case. And the but is that much of the state support is duplicated. So a department in a province may offer similar support. Two departments may even offer similar support. The lack of coordination, even where departments and the different spheres of government complement each other in what they offer, these programs are not always connected to each other. They disperse, we give a little bit to many, and in the process we don't always bring enough concentration of technical and financial resources to help build a viable small business sector. And finally, on the more narrow issue around CIFA, our model of funding historically relied very strongly on intermediaries, either the big banks, where we offered a credit guarantee scheme, where the role of the state was simply to say to the large banks, when you lend to small businesses, we will carry some of the risk. And other financial intermediaries, often these are operating at community level, where CEOs make capital and other funding available to those intermediaries. And so the model of funding didn't give the state enough opportunity to connect the resources directly with the recipients. It created, in many cases, layers between itself and the recipients. And there are challenges that I'll talk to, and I'm sure the committee would have raised in previous discussions. So given that situational analysis, what did we decide to do? We decided on a step-by-step process, not a big bang, but a series of steps over a number of years. First, to consolidate and integrate what we do. Second, to do this without interrupting the service we provide to beneficiary. In other words, we couldn't put everything on hold for 2 years, sort out our institutional realignment, and then get back into the business of supporting small business. We had to keep going. Third, we consolidated 3 entities, Kula South and the IBC Small Business Book, into CIFA. And these are part of a wider program that the committee will be monitoring over time. It includes other steps that are still to be taken or that are currently in progress, is connecting CIFA with the IBC pipeline. In other words, when we do a major multi-billion rand investment in the green economy or in mining, is to look for the opportunity to bring small businesses dynamically into that pipeline, so that you don't shift small businesses to spaza shops and just the edges of the economy. You bring them into central guide around your economy. Second, it's connecting CIFA with the provinces and metros. Eventually, the ideal model would be one where the provincial and metro funding agencies would combine themselves in CIFA and the state across all spheres would have a single window that small businesses can go to. Even though some of the product mix may be affected by provincial or local government preference, so we would recognize the need for some diversity. Third is to connect CIFA and the technical support of the state. Institutions like CEDA, the Small Enterprise Development Agency. And finally, is to connect CEDA and CIFA with all small business funding of various departments, so that if science and technology has got an innovation fund and a small business person has a great idea of new technology or a new process, that we can draw across the sector. So that's the vision that we have that we will seek to achieve step by step. As I indicated, the first step was launching CIFA. The CIFA was launched at the start of this financial year. I concur, Jefferson, with you that it was launched just at the right time. It's a key moment for us to use the institution. And by way of its governance structure, we were keen to ensure that all the direct national small business funding agencies come under one roof. That in creating that roof, we limit duplication and unnecessary administrative costs. That we connect it with a central industrial funding in the economy. Remember, small business funding is a type of industrial funding. It's a more narrowly defined one. It's only for small businesses, but it falls within a wide category of industrial funding. We look at the IBC. It has a legal mandate to also support small business. It's governed by the Industrial Development Corporation Act. And Cabinet, after reflection, felt the most appropriate form of consolidation is to make CIFA, a new agency, a wholly owned subsidiary of the IBC. The IBC has its own main board, but the IBC has a number of subsidiaries, some wholly owned, others not. CIFA has an unusual role in that because it is seeking to give effect to one of the specific mandates of the IBC, namely to support small business development. So given that, and given some of the specifics of the sector, Cabinet has also nominated a board for CIFA. That is fairly standard in our economy that the holding company has bought and the subsidiary has bought. It's a fiscal standards arrangement, and it helps to improve governance. EED is the reporting department for both the IDC and its subsidiaries, which include CIFA in this case. And one of the areas as CIFA rolls out its program is to strengthen and expand the EDD capacity to ensure that CIFA is able to achieve more of the development goals of government. That we don't measure its impact only through cash flow to small businesses, although that's very important, but also on areas like jobs, provincial development, cooperatives, and so on. Now, Chairperson Gini, just before the formal presentation is delivered by the CEO, I want to indicate that I've met recently with the CEO, and I have met in the past with the Chair, to evaluate the progress that CIFA has made since its establishment. And I wanted to share high level with the committee some 9 areas of focus that the department has in respect to CIFA. So these are, if you like, the tests that we apply or areas that we keep focus on. They may duplicate in some ways areas that the committee may want to look at, and they may in other areas be specific and standalone. So the first area we look at is how well has CIFA in its first period of existence integrated its systems, its people, and its offices. So that's the first thing we ask. So let me deal with this. The detail will come in the presentation, but in the system, we needed CIFA to integrate its IT, its payroll, and its other systems. We've given CIFA until 30 June this year to complete that process. Considerable work has been done. I hope the CEO will be able to share it with the committee. And so completing the systems integration, we believe, is a necessary part of what is needed. On people, we need the staff of particularly summer and cooler to be fully integrated, not just to be nominally employed by CIFA, but to work coherently with a single manager in each provincial office, and for the beginning of a strong new staff identity. We expect at least 90% of the people integration process to be completed by the end of this month. And we expect CIFA to complete the remaining 10% of the integration work during the first quarter of the new financial year. On offices, we expect all offices to be integrated by the end of March this year. In other words, within the next 3 weeks. On corporate identity, CIFA has given us detailed reports now on the extent to which it's just been able to do, from fairly practical things like getting business cards, stationery and promotional material. And the deadline we've given them is by the end of March. In other words, in 3 weeks' time, all of that work needs to be completed. So that's the first area, integration of systems, people and offices. The second area we've looked at, Jefferson, is promoting access. And promoting access means the number of people who use CIFA, but also the composition of the users. And that requires, among others, communication and marketing. We've given CIFA the task now that it should not rely only on broadcasting, radio, television, and so on. That's necessary and important. But we need to ensure that there is a direct presence in communities where people can interact, ask questions. So I requested the CEO to set up between the 1st of April and the end of February next year 18 roadshows, a minimum of 18 roadshows, all 9 provinces need to be covered, and at least 50% of those roadshows should be in small towns or rural areas. At least 50% of the roadshows. I've also asked that CIFA should regularly report on establishing a presence outside its main provincial office. So those are things like satellite offices. But the most important way in which we can promote access, because it will cost an enormous sum of money to set up a CIFA office in every settlement across the country. So the strategy is to use the post office network as post office set up its post bank, which is a decision that Parliament has taken, that we create a window in every post office, or let's call it post bank, for CIFA. So communities would have access right across the country. So part of our work is to move faster on the post bank side. So that's on the question of access. The third area we've covered is key deliverables. And yeah, I'm not talking of your internal work on integrating systems and so on, that's important, but we need to deliver while we're integrating. And there's been 6 areas that we have asked CIFA to report regularly. And the CEO, I think today, will be providing some of the information in more detail. But first we want to know regularly how much money has CIFA approved for applications. Because we're going to get the sum of money that goes to small businesses must increase. And so we use the baseline of 2011-2012. We combine the Summer and Cooler money, and we compare then CIFA's performance in the first 10 months. So effectively until the end of January, I think in some cases they've been able to get the information up to late February. That in some cases could be 11 months. How well have we performed? The story that's coming out there appears to be a positive story, and Mr. Makuga will go through the detail, but at high level, the information we've received from CIFA indicates that it has increased approval by more than 100%. The second indicator we asked for under deliverable is disbursement. How much money has actually been paid? Not approved, because you can approve a loan but it could be subject to certain conditions and so on, and you work through that. So you could have an impressive sounding figure on the approval side, but the money's not leaving your account because they are administrative other problems. So disbursement is a very important test. And there, the report that we've received has been a very significant increase in the disbursement rate. It seems to have almost doubled in this period. The third test that we apply is how much money is directed through a direct lending model, not through intermediaries, but through the systems and capability that CIFA is building up itself. Last year, there was a pilot project. Members of the committee would call Pula Dari was the pilot. I'm now advised that there's been more than a fourfold increase in the Dari engine from last year to this year. 4 times higher than what it was. The fourth area we look at under the deliverables is how much does it cost us for every event that a small business entity or the small businesses themselves receive inside. In other words, what's the cost of administration and overhead? We have a fixed sum that Parliament votes every year. We've got to make sure as much of that money leaves CIFA's account into the account of small businesses, viable small businesses create jobs. The more money that is taken up by CIFA staff and offices and cars and cell phones and so on, obviously a portion of that is necessary, but the more money is absorbed by the bureaucracy, the less money is available to the recipients. So we're beginning to measure that. The early indications that the slides for the figures show that we are moving in the right direction, that we are reducing the amount of charges that the institution absorbs for every rand that is lent or dispersed. We will keep an eye on that. We want to know from CIFA on its deliverables what are the staff training for direct lending. And finally, we want to know, is the money distributed equitably? For example, how much of it goes to rural areas? And we've got a set of criteria that I'll come to. So that's the third big thing. So the first one was integration of systems, office, and people. The second big thing was access. The third big thing was key deliverables. The fourth one, honourable members, Chairperson, is intermediate. Clearly, CIFA has to work in partnership. It can't disperse all of the money using only its own instruments and capacity. But there are problems. The problems are ones that the committee has in the past raised. Many of the intermediaries charge extremely high fees and interest. While legislation caps the percentage interest that may be charged, we are aware that in the market out there, companies often add other costs and charges when they lend, resulting in enormous repayment burdens to small businesses. So our directive to CIFA now will be to review the cost that intermediaries charge the end user and to begin exit from the partnership with intermediaries with very high cost structures, and to support those intermediaries who, if I can put it more bluntly, I guess, charge lower interest. So that well-run intermediaries who pass the benefits of the CIFA relationship to the end users must be preferred. But we're also beginning to see something new. It's a new idea that CIFA has developed to use a new kind of intermediary. And CIFA will talk through detail, but they've identified chambers of business and commerce as potential partners. And so they've entered into an agreement with NAFCOC and FAPOS to set up a joint fund as one means to expand their capacity to lend. The next area that we will be talking to CIFA regularly is direct lending. What capacity is it building up? And what's the impact of direct lending? It's a new area for the state, so we're going to have to look at it carefully over the next few years. How many of the loans are actually repaid? What percentage is not repaid? What they call the impairment rate? And are we more efficient than the intermediary? Do we spend less the rand that the beneficiary gets than what the intermediaries do. So those are areas that we'll be looking at carefully. Next, integration across the state. We'll be talking to FIFA regularly about how to integrate better. Not just integrating FIFA, but integrating with the rest of the state. I've asked the CEO what steps will be taken to create one-stop shop where a business can go to one venue and you can find the IDT there, you can find CIFA, you can find CEDA, you can find the NEF and so on. And I have recognized that all these entities are subject to lease agreements. So we have to manage the process that as leases expire, we begin to bring the public entities that support business together in one venue. I'm happy to indicate that CIFA has done some work already. In the case of Pietermaritzburg, the municipal area, they will now take offices with the IDC. In Mafeking, they will take offices with the IDC. And in Polokwane, they will take offices in the same building as CEDA. So step by step, we will now be looking at how we can integrate. These are just early steps to an eventual consolidation. We're looking at how CIFA and CEDA can work more closely together. How CIFA can work with the big entities like Transnet and Eskom when they get contracts, and subcontractors are small businesses, how we can bring funding and procurement together. And finally, and most importantly, how CIFA can leverage off the IDC's investment portfolio. The IDC is intending to spend 25 billion rand on the green economy in the next 5 years or so. That's an enormous sum of money. And it's in that that we must find opportunities for small businesses. Now, I've spoken quite at length, Chairperson, on integration across the state. The private sector is vital to the promotion of small business. So CIFA's next program, after it's completed integration, must be to deepen the contact it has with the private sector. Already it has the financial intermediaries, it's got the credit guarantee arrangement with the banks. But companies that are supported by CIFA should also be included in incubation programs. We should get private sector mentorships where these are appropriate and try to promote that these small businesses are included in the supply chain of big companies. So a Sasol or a Anglo Gold needs to work on partnerships with small businesses. Cooperatives are vital. CIFA has now been asked to do some work on a strategy that will yield targets for cooperatives that you can measure as a ministry and as a department and that we can be accountable to Parliament through the portfolio committee. And finally, equitable distribution. To see that we are covering all provinces, that we increasingly emphasize the work in poorer provinces, that we cover youth-owned enterprises and youth cooperatives, that we gender equity, promotion of women-owned businesses, and that CIFA develops a lending and funding relationship with rurally based enterprises. So these are areas that the ministry and the department will be engaging on an ongoing basis. They're not the full list, but they are 9 of the more prominent and key areas that we'll be working on in the period ahead. In the presentation, Chairperson, I think the CEO would want to point to some early successes, some challenges that the institution is working on, and some of the time frames. So thank you. I've taken a bit of time in the introductory remarks really to also clarify where the department is seeking to ensure that CIFA makes the impact that is necessary, and that it increasingly becomes a valuable tool, as the chair said, to help meet the country's broad goals, and I would point to the employment and development goals. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. We really appreciate the brief on progress, especially on the reason why CIFA, the reason for CIFA's existence. I want us to really, I don't know how early would want the minister want to leave, but I wanted us to interact with this remark. Before we go to the chairperson of CIFA, because we're going to visit them until the end of the meeting. But just entertain what the minister has given us, apart from the technical aspects or other administrative aspects that would be given by the CIFA itself. Can we interact with us? Julie? Any other hands? If you don't come in now, then I'm not going to give you any opportunity. You miss this opportunity. Mr. Mubu, Mr. Ngonyama, honorable members. That's all. Thank you. I should be starting with the other members before the whip. If we were to follow the protocol, please allow us.
Hello, I'm pushing me now. I think I was reformulating my question, but you're certain that you're not going to come back after. So can
you can still allow member Ngonyama, because he's ready. You for continue the formulation.
What now, Chairperson, the issue that is the first issue that I would like to pose on the minister or clerk. Firstly, I would like to appreciate those and the input. I'll let it be that I came a bit late, but I think I managed to grasp the middle part of the input. Is this partnership with the Institute of Chartered Accountants program, and which I believe, and it goes a long way in enhancing growth of skills and people, and it definitely, if we actually go through it properly, it will have a very strong impact in our economy. And because we have very, very few of the qualified chartered accountants, and to have that critical mass goes a long way. Last time it was a briefing, we referred to a program that was set in Bramfontein, if I'm not mistaken. And our question then was, how do we replicate this program to other provinces? Because and it's something that needs to be replicated fairly quickly if it's supposed to have the impact that is intended. The next one, and is the question of the cooperative. And maybe I'm being uncertain is that because the cooperatives have been mentioned as that maybe one of the instruments for enterprises but we have not, this input is not about cost. But there has been an idea of launching a national structure of cooperatives. And if I'm not mistaken, that structure has actually gone flank. I need to be clarified how do we deal with that? And why should we be starting by putting up another structure? Because cooperatives is about enhancing democracy. It's supposed to be a bottom-up approach. And then, therefore, setting up an umbrella structure should be the last and the third. Firstly, it should be the cooperatives themselves initiating the process upwards and then launch and then this structure. And I presume if it is true that it has one plan, that must be one of the reasons. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Yemi, Honorable Mubu.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm ready now. Just three short questions. Would the minister indicate to us whether the
have been any job loss as a result of the measure of the that he mentioned. Secondly, it's outside of your presentation right now, but I want to find out to what extent will small business be involved in the government's rollout program of infrastructure projects. Because I think that they have an important role to play, so, but I want to know to what extent they're going to be given the opportunity to play in this. You also mentioned the issue of the high business interests that are imposed upon SMEs by intermediaries. Surely there must be something that government can do to go around this. What are the actual plans that you have to go around this concern? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair President. And I would also like to welcome the presentation by the Minister. In fact, it helps a lot. Chair President, firstly, I want to thank the relationship or working relationship between Kula Direct and the Postbank. How is it going to what is the relationship? And then another thing, I still think it will be better if we find out the failure of Kula and SAP before the merger. Because I think we tried to let the merger because there were problems with Kula and SAP. If we can find out how many successes, and then how many did we merge which were successful, and then how many said, no, let's cancel what we call it. If the thing is not viral, it's like off. How many said, oh, these things, we are shipping great money, so let's do away all party. What were the cause of those SMEs to fail? If we can, but I'm not expecting to fail, but if we can estimate that these were the failures for the climate change to start, and these were the successes, so that we can say, let's continue the success. the cooperative being in the DTI. Well, how do we, because the co-op, we also got co-ops which are SMMEs in the coordination. We want to check the co-op being under DTI management. And then we are in the economic development. So what is the relationship? Or it's just a maintenance agreement that we work in, like CETA, where we find a CETA there, but it's supposed to serve as the finance in the economic development. Plus co-op now, say, these three, the CETA co-op and CIFA. Lastly, Chairperson, it will be dependent on the, I'll give some of the questions by Ramamogu. We were told that Chair, when the two major, the two entities, SAMA and Kula, there will be no job loss. Now, there are some tribes saying, hey, we are not being accommodated. It's only one SAMA which is accommodated is Kula. And SAMA is just being neglected as if it's not a partner in this nation. We want to check that. To check that against the challenge, because we do know the challenge. You are saying the entity must be functional. So let's collapse it and make a measure to improve the performance. But the personality, same people have been working there and you say it is safe. Now you want to improve. But these people are still going to participate in the new. How do you How do you say that? I mean, I want to check that if you say nobody will lose jobs. Mind you, that what the union, which is steady, or let's say, not even that union, let's say, these are the people who have been there and who were told they are not going to lose jobs. But now, during the match, to affect something new or something, a new working ethic. How do you say that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mabutuji. Minister, thank you very much for the presentation. The remarks, actually, it was both a presentation. quite informative, I must say, in terms of progress made, where you're coming from, where you are, in terms of the report that you've been given, and the instruction that you have also issued to CIFA, they are quite clear. I just want to understand as to whether the, in as far as the statement made that the cabinet nominated board for CIFA in order to help in improving the governance, and the fact that CIFA is a wholly owned subsidiary of the IEC. I think I understand I understand what you're saying, but something that I'm failing to understand in terms of the governance and the role of the committee in as far as its oversight on CIFA on this issue. The Act itself, the IEC Act, We understand that, but what we're failing to understand is which part of IEC Act, informs CIFA. That would help us to clearly understand. And then the wholly owned subsidiary, how is it going to function, Mr. Minister? How is it going to function in terms of in terms of accountability? Yeah, let me put it that way. Thank you, John. Give it a moment. It's accountability, the form that is going to be taken from now on. I think some of the questions were asked by my colleague, Dukwi. I agree that few minutes, actually I'm impressed by the fact that you are going to be connecting, the work of CIFA with other stakeholders, like the provinces, like the other, departments, government departments and so forth, and other entities within the government itself. I think that really is a relief because you're talking to issues of cooperation also and coordination, which are very critical in this regard, and issues that the committee has been raising. But then the question on the intermediary then comes in. That is to follow what Comrade Njulu was saying. I think the issue that you are raising of reviewing the cost or the yes. It is to us very, very important because we were disturbed, as we reported even before, by the fact that there was no uniformity, because the issue here is uniformity. I mean, what's happening in the Western Cape should also be seen happening in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, in other provinces. You shouldn't find a situation that when you are in Limpopo, intermediate, even in what you call special ones, the new intermediaries in the form of NACOC and SACOC. I think that should be happening. You should see that happening again. But you see on the left hand side, also see on the right hand side. I think we are encouraged. I had another question I wanted to verify. In the issues or the instructions issued to the CIFA, I think one of the issues that you should expect from the minister is the issue of jobs. This department's main role is to monitor the number of jobs created, you know, number of jobs shared, number of jobs that can be helped to be retained. And it is also important, and this we've been asking to all entities, not only CIFA, to all entities, but one of the instructions should be that CIFA should also report on the number of jobs created through the work that they are doing. I think that is very, very important if we are to see the improvement in the job creation aspect. How are we going to manage this new way of the new form of intermediary? It's very important because we wouldn't want to get to an area and we told no, it's not your job. We can't divulge information here because we should first consult our members, or we should first consult the board, or we should first consult the department before we are able to give you information and so forth. We're just interested in how this is going to be functioning. And how soon are you going to change from the current model of intermediary to the other one? I know you are trying to get closer to the people, but it would also be important that you explain to us as to how is it going to work. How are people going to be accessing this particular finance lending through the particular subsidiary, new forms of subsidiary? Yeah, I think I must leave it here. Wababa, you all right? Okay, you look very worried. That's why I'm asking you. Minister, can we hand over to you?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, both for your questions as well as the questions that the other honourable members have put to me. I want to preface my response with the observation that the presentation that Mr. Makuva, the CEO, and the Chairperson, Ms. Enberg, will be talking to is quite interesting, and there's a lot of really detailed information, and so some of these issues may well be covered in those, and I was at pains not to take the thunder, CEO, from you by revealing all of the good news that you have. I wanted you to have some important storyline to the committee, so I'm not going to take away all the good sound. But let me start in the order in which the questions were raised. Honourable Ngonyama, I concur with you on the importance of the partnership with SAGA. But you know what we've learned, and it's a difficult issue sometimes for many South Africans to agree on this. Our critical skill shortage is not always at the top end of the skill pyramid. To engineers and chartered accountants. Yes, there are challenges there too. But very often, it's your mid-level skills that is either weak or insufficient. So we, part of the SAICA partnership is developing this mid-level skill base where a small enterprise can employ a capable and competent finance officer. When they look around now, they either find very expensive CA level people that are unaffordable for a small business, or people with a basic diploma from one of the colleges that don't really have any work experience and often don't have the ability to step in and be the company accountant. That's the layer we really think we need to strengthen for small business development. So the department has now put forward a proposal to me, which I've agreed to, which will now go through the processes with Treasury, to expand the current program, which covers one province, into a program that will bring 3 new provinces on board. It's not sufficient. We need eventually to have this replicated nationally across all 9 provinces. It needs at some stage to be a standalone budgetary item, either under EDD or higher education or DTR. We don't mind where it's located. But right now, we're doing it step by step. So this year, we'll bring 3 more provinces in. So thank you for that. On the co-opetive question, what the Honourable Mgonyama has drawn attention to is that it was a proposal for an umbrella body of co-opetives. Now, of course, co-opetives is a challenging area for many reasons. And we've got here the Honourable Mabasa, who's quite an expert in co-ops himself and has frequently spoken about it. So he may want to, at some stage, also add to this. But the first thing is that co-op is an independent organization of vendors. It can't be created by the state. And too many co-ops think that the solution lies with government, which will precisely destroy the independence of that as an enterprise in the social economy. We have a role in government to play to help, but it has to be driven and inspired by the self-organization of ordinary entrepreneurs. And as you all know, co-ops have played a key role, not only in other countries, but even in South Africa, in the past, particularly in white agriculture. Many people have a sense of agriculture that misses how important the role of co-ops was in dairy farming, for example. You would not have had today's successful dairy farmers if you didn't have a clover. What is clover? Clover was a co-op. It's no longer co-op, it's now corporatized. You would not have had a successful wine export industry without the KWB. What was that? It was a cooperative. You would not have had a very important wool farming industry without BKB, which is what is BKB. It's a cooperative. So these are examples of why cooperatives really are important. But they must be the producers themselves who drive it, run it, push it. And government's role is only support, like small business, support small business. But we can't run the business. Someone else must take the risk. And that's, I think, the key. So on the question of an umbrella structure, of course, we would always like a single entity we can talk to in terms of working out what is necessary. We need both an umbrella structure and self-organization at the bottom end, where the enterprise is located. The co-op is an enterprise. It's an economic organization. It has different principles. They've got an international body called the ICA, the International Cooperative Alliance. But that's really what we need. Honorable Nubu, you've raised questions that intersect a little bit with the questions raised by Honourable Ntuli, so I'll take some of those questions together. The first question is, were there any job losses due to the merger? And the answer is no, there were no job losses due to the merger. But if I go to Honourable Ntuli's comments and questions, do you see what we're trying to create with CIFA, Honourable Members, Chairperson, is not simply welding together two structures, Sama and Kula, and giving it a common name. We start like that. But from here, we now want it to have its own corporate identity. I don't mean a name. I don't mean an emblem. Those are the least important parts. I mean a philosophy of service of people, which has often been lacking in parts of the two entities that we merged. We want to be frank. The old Kula and old Samaf was no great model. And so we need a model that puts service of people first. And that means that staff will be required to work in different ways. There may be complaints here and there. It's the nature of any big amalgamation. I would be surprised, I would be disappointed if everybody was so comfortable that no one complained. There has to be change if we are to service our people. If you underperform, there has to be consequences. If you waste money, I looked at, I'm just using some of as an example, I'm sure Kula will say, it's an example. But I looked a few years ago at one of the provinces where someone was spending an enormous sum of money to deliver a tiny sum of money to a recipient. Now that can't be right. That's not why Parliament votes the money. So I think I'm going to recognize the important question that was asked. I'm going to suggest that there will be from time to time a need for adjustment, but there'll be no job losses. It will, however, require the staff to work differently. And the CEO will progressively introduce new systems, new ways of doing things, and new measures of impact and consequences if those are not achieved. That has to be there. The next question that the Honourable Nubo asked was infrastructure rollout for business. Yes, is it all? We're already doing some of it now. In the school world program that the President spoke to in the State of the Nation, we identified 49 schools in the Eastern Cape where we wanted to replace mud structures with proper schools. I looked at the contractors and subcontractors. A number of those schools were driven purely by small businesses. Not always without challenges and difficulties, but small contractors were often the providers of service. You take your big contracts like Kusile or Medici, the big construction companies, Group 5, Murray Roberts and so on, they have the main contracts, but an enormous amount of the work is actually done by subcontractors, many of which are small businesses. Our job must be to ensure that there's a viable commercial relationship. That a small business is not killed in the process of completing the work, with all the capital of the entrepreneur exhausted, and when the new project starts, it's a new group of small businesses. It's how to nurture and support them, that these big programs are the launch pad that South Africa has to develop constantly, dynamic small businesses that become medium-sized and become large businesses. We're not very successful in turning our small businesses into large businesses. The fees and interest paid by intermediaries, Honorable Luba asked the question, what can government do? And the chairperson also asked questions around the intermediaries. Well, I would start by saying the very first thing government must do is measure it. Make sure that we know what is the true cost, not the cost on paper, but the true cost, because hidden behind the paper are all sorts of other fees and charges that pushes the effective interest rate, or let's call it bluntly, the effective cost of the lending is pushed up. So that has to be measured for every intermediary that CIFA has a partnership with. The ones that have an inordinately high interest rate, and I'm going to make one important qualification in a moment, but they need progressively to be exited from the CIFA books, because our job is to provide the best possible service to our people. The qualification, it's an important qualification, and it comes to the question of also by the chair. The cost of a loan is determined mainly by the risk of the loan. Because risks are not the same. You come in with two ideas. One idea is one that you can see, look, this one is going to make money. There's very little chance of going wrong. Let's say someone lands a contract to supply food for the Economic Development Portfolio Committee. You can say the committee has got 20 scheduled meetings, you can work out the cash flow, you can work out the margin, you can say it's a guaranteed contract, it's not going to lose money. But perhaps, if it was another committee, perhaps that committee cancels half of its meetings. Now all of your beautiful cash flow is thrown up because the customer said, no, we're not going to use your service. So that's where risk now comes. So, it's not that the high interest and the low interest are always a function of a intermediary taking profit. Many times it's that, but sometimes it affects the risk profile of who you lend to. Now the state has a responsibility to absorb some of that risk which is why we've got a public institution. If it was Standard Bank or Absa, they would do a simple equation that says, high risk, high interest. Our job is to say, how do we bring people in poor provinces into the economic mainstream? How do we make young people with energy and ideas come in as the future big entrepreneurs, the future owners of large enterprises? So we've got to take some risk as the state. So we can't simply replicate private sector model through our intermediaries, because if we do that, then it means all of the risk is privatized. It's only that small player that must carry all the risk. When you do that, it's such a big burden, very many people then don't get into the formal economy. So I think it's an issue of trying to balance that risk that is going to lie at the heart of the CIFA model. And I think the CEO and the chair is very aware of the need to look at that. So the short answer, Honourable Lou, we think that government can do. We're not paralyzed, we can't hold our hands and say it's outside of our hands. We can step in, we can measure what is happening, we can weed out the ones that charge an inordinately high interest rate, and we can also take on some of the risk ourselves as government to help bring down the interest rate. Now, and incidentally, the arrangement of the commercial banks is exactly aimed to achieve that. It's to allow the banks to charge us somewhat lower interest rates because some of the risk is carried by the state. The next question Honourable Tulia asked is the relationship between Kuladayk and the Post Bank. We're waiting for the Post Bank to be launched. So there's a process, they've applied for a banking license. They've appointed the board, a whole set of steps we can, if needs be, at some point, leave the committee on the steps that have been taken on the Post Bank side after Parliament passed the necessary legislation, I think about a year and a half ago, if my memory serves. Now, the idea is once the Post Bank infrastructure is in place, then in every post bank, which should be pretty much in every post office, there will be a window for CIFA, a place where people can come to, get the information, and interact with CIFA. It won't always be a staff member that is full-time. It could be a post bank staff member that's trained to handle CIFA issues. And the age we live and work in now, in a rural area, you can have your post office linked to the national office via Skype, via video conferencing. So you could have a person available sitting in Pretoria speaking to someone who sits in Lusikisiki and having a proper conversation, and you can get all the information scanned in immediately. You know, it's incredible what countries are doing with technology to reduce the distance between the rural and urban. We're no longer in the situation we were in the 19th century. We now have ICTs, our friends, in reducing the gap there. So that's how the model will work. And it allows them for the post bank to be the agent of CIFA through the thousands of networks that it has. What were the failures of Kula and Samaf? I think it would be helpful at the future meeting that CIFA could reflect a bit on that. Always helpful. But I think we have done an initial assessment of that, which led us to conclude we wanted to combine these two and change them. We decided not to let Samaf simply be swallowed up by Kula. That was one model that I did consider. Do we just bring Samaf into Kula? But because of the challenges across both, we wanted a fresh institution, and we wanted to give this institution a fresh focus. I can run through some of the challenges, but I think I won't do proper justice to it. I'll just give a few headlines. Cost was too high. Access was too low. The institutions were eating too much of the money, and the beneficiary was getting too little. The risk systems were not well defined, so we were putting money into areas that we shouldn't have, and we were keeping money out of areas where we should have put it in. And most importantly, we didn't use the IDC. And that was a big mistake. Because the IDC is the country's main industrial financier. And small business funding is just a subset of industrial funding. So those are some of the mistakes that we think with Kula and Samaf. Right off, Honorable Tuli, what are the causes? Well, let me say something, and I hope I can say it without the possibility of being misinterpreted. When you're in small business lending, there's no guarantees. It can't be possible for every single lender to succeed. If every single lender succeeds, and there's never any write-off, it means your risk appetite is too low. So you've got to set some risk on board, and hopefully many times the risk will be justified, and it will be a successful business, and sometimes the company won't succeed, but that's the nature of a market economy. There's no guarantees you can work with. So for me, a write-off is not on its own something that indicates CIFA or its predecessors fail. It's whether those write-offs show negligence in considering the application, or whether it reflects a good risk that the institution took that sometimes won't work. But that's the nature, when you operate in a mixed economy, that you have to expect some companies will fail and some companies will succeed. On the co-ops in the DTI, well, there are co-op support programs in any department. I think the DTI programs are the most advanced in many cases, and there are also programs in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, rural cooperatives. And EDD basically has not been set up as a department to administer individual grants to companies. We've got DTI for that, and we've got a great relationship with the DTI. EDD's responsibility is integrate, coordinate, connect. So our job now would be to ensure that CIFA connects with the other parts of government. So in fact, if the DTI was to offer that all of the co-op support programs should come to EDD, my advice to my colleague Minister Davis would be, no, keep it in the DTI. But let us play the role in EDD in helping to connect the DTI's co-op programs with ESCOM procurement programs, with CIFA's funding, with the support that we can get from the Gauteng province of Limpopo, connecting them. If your job is just managing a program, you don't think about connecting these things. So the EDD role is a coordinating, integrating role. The final question by Anubhong Thuli, is only Kula being accommodated in CIFA, but about some of that set of concerns? I think the easy answer is that it's a merger of both and it's a new institution. There will be complaints because we are introducing change. It's necessary to get change, and human beings being what we all are, when there is change, it makes it uncomfortable. We're going to complain. But I think we must express ourselves as a necessary part of succeeding. If we stand back each time the criticism, nothing will be done. We'll be very popular among the staff, but nothing will get done. So I just offer this, and the CEO and chair may want to cover specifics later. The final set of issues with the valuable comments that you've made. I'll first deal with the question of the governance arrangement. The Industrial Development Corporation Act has a few areas that are relevant to CIFA. Section 3D of the Act requires the IDC to foster the development of small and medium enterprises and cooperatives. So that's under Section 3D of the IDC Act. So CIFA is a wholly owned subsidiary of the IDC would be the instrument to give effect to that legislative mandate. Second, 4B empowers the IDC to lend small and medium enterprises. And Section 4E allows the IDC to guarantee small and medium enterprise loans. Now, that's just the technical legal answer to it. The other part of the answer is, how will this work? Well, taking, of course, remember, CIFA would operate in dynamic, fast-moving markets, in the private sector and in the social economy. We've learned a lot about corporate structure. So the IDC main board will get a quarterly report from CIFA. I bet the IDC board a week or so ago, and they outlined to me how they will incorporate the small business arrangement. Secondly, we've nominated the chairperson of CIFA onto the main board of the IDC. So, Ms. Rensburg, Tizeka Rensburg, serves also on the IDC main board. So she's a direct, on a regular policy basis, the connection between the main board and the subsidiary. Third, the CEO is ultimately accountable to the CEO of the IDC on the operational performance issues. Obviously, there's oversight, ministerial oversight, and so on. Now, when a subsidiary brings, when you have a wholly owned subsidiary and you create a board there, you give certain powers to that board and you retain other powers for yourself. So the IDC main board is the only body that makes a decision on how to use the IDC's general investable fund. So the CIFA board can't make a decision to require the IDC to make 900 million rand available. That would be a decision of the IDC board. But once the board has made the decision, ensuring proper governance structures in how 900 million rand is dispersed is the role of the CIFA board. Obviously they work with the ministry and so on, but that's really the difference between the main board and the wholly owned subsidiaries board. Now we come to the relationship with the department. The IDC reports to economic development, and we've arranged with the IDC, as part of them taking on the wholly owned subsidiary, that is also separate and specific reporting by CIFA. Given the importance of small business, we don't want it only lost in the IDC aggregate. We want to lift it out because it's so important. In respect, therefore, of the Parliamentary Committee, it would be very helpful, Chair, if in addition to the general IDC report, that when the IDC accounts to the committee, that CIFA is also there so that it accounts for the overall story as well as the small business story. In fact, the committee's oversight role is going to be continuing and, if anything, I think strengthened. The next question on uniformity between provinces, I think we will want to ensure now that we begin to benchmark what the costs are of intermediaries. As I said, the only valid reason for distinguishing are two. The main one is the risk profile of the person you're lending to, and the second one is the administrative cost. Obviously, operating in a rural area is sometimes more costly than operating in an urban area. All sorts of things. I know it sounds strange, but you can often get a much greater efficiency in an urban area because you've got a much bigger client base. You can defer your end costs off a larger client base and so on. So we must monitor to ensure that there are not this kind of differences the committee is drawing our attention to that is not justified. If they're justified, we must be able to come to the committee and say we've investigated and the findings are the following. So that you don't find that the poorest areas end up with a higher cost, which is often the case, that it's easier and cheaper to run an operation in Joburg than it is in Lepalawe. The question, the suggestion you've made, Shepherdson, that jobs should be monitored, jobs created, jobs shed, and jobs saved or retained. First, thank you. I will make that a specific request. It is already being measured at the moment, so you'll find it is in the documentation. However, and I say this mindful of the fact that it needs a lot more work than I can ask the management and the board to do between now and then. They'll talk in a few minutes' time. I am concerned about the quality of the job numbers. We need to stress test them, because CIFA has inherited the systems from Samar and Kula about measuring jobs, and some of these are measured on what they call a formula basis. So this is an assumption made that if you support one micro-enterprise or if you support four micro-enterprises, it may create one job, that kind of thing. We need to do more work as a department working with CIFA to make sure the top numbers we put in the public domain are credible and justifiable. If we put up high numbers and our people don't see the evidence of it, in the end they don't believe anything that comes from the institution. So there are quality control that needs to be done. So we'll take your point, we'll work on this area, but we'll only begin to trumpet the numbers very loudly when we have lots of confidence in them. So they are in the presentation, but I think this should be taken through a stress test. Maybe after that we become convinced these numbers are great and they're accurate, but I suspect we'll also find some challenges that we need to fix. Finally, Chairperson, you've raised a question that I think the Chair and CEO can answer in more detail. How will CIFA manage the new forms of intermediaries? For example, the kind of relationship with chambers of business, where there are co-funding funds that are set up. I think I'll make a general point, but the detail I think would be very helpful, and I think Ms. Rensburg has been quite involved in the discussions with NAFCOC and FACOC, as has Mr. Makurwa. Confidentiality of information, there may be some help in us developing some protocol between the committee and the department. Obviously, we don't want the confidential information about an individual company that their competitors can use to come out in the public domain. Every company has its trade secrets. You've got to reveal your trade secret to your financier. That's the rule every bank makes. Tell absolutely all your problems, as well as all of the ways in which you're going to make money. So you've got to basically show your whole hand. Then the bank or the financial institution looks at it and says, we're convinced you can make money, we're going to back you. Now if that comes in the public domain, anyone else can take that same idea and compete unfairly with an idea that belongs to someone else. So we just need to find a way in which the committee can play the oversight role, because it's not something that is only helpful, it's necessary. You are ultimately the representatives of the South African population, because you account at constituency level to the various political parties in Parliament. So we must empower you, because that's where we create more legitimacy for CIFA. So I don't see it as it's an obligation, you know, let's see how we can wriggle out of it. You need to be empowered, and at the same time we need to avoid a small business being compromised commercially. I think that a discussion between the department and the portfolio committee, maybe some protocols can be developed. How soon will the current model be changed to the new one? Well, at the moment we're retaining the current model, we're changing it. We're introducing new models. We let them live side by side. And we basically want to see which models give us the best social return at the lowest cost. So we want social return and one cost. And so we'll be seeing, you know, does the partnership with NAFCOC and FACOC help to lower the cost of the loan than other partnerships do with it, so on. So this is an area that will be looked at. And I think CEO can answer the question, Chairperson, that you put, which is how will people exit money from the new partnerships? In other words, how, for example, the NAFCOC-FACOC application system works and so on. So I hope, Chairperson, I know in some of these areas there are more details that the staff and the CEO and Chairperson has that they can fruitfully share with you. But I would have given an indication from a policy directive where the ministry comes in the engagement with CIFA. CIFA is young, it's not even its first full year. I don't know if they're going to have a chicken burger party for their committee when they celebrate their first year, but no extensive things, because Honourable Thuli will ask parliamentary questions on how much has been spent on the first anniversary. So you may have to make it burgers and coffee. But I think from what I've seen in the first year, there's been very clear gains, and I think our story must now be to communicate that better. We've not done as much on the communication front because most of the work's gone into tidying up the system. Yes, there are still challenges. Yes, that's what we expected. Any big merger, even of two big companies, takes years to eventually solve all of those problems. For me, the question is, has the management been affected by the merger in a way that small business is not getting money? And the answer is no. On the contrary, we are now putting more money into the system and beneficiaries are getting a greater cash flow. But the CEO will elaborate on that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think also the time is not on our side. We really will appreciate to get more info around some of these issues. But especially on the issue of the merging of the integration of the human resource between the merged entities, quite critical, quite important for us. Because we'd want to know, Minister, whether, because we hear there are promotions, and how are those promotions performed? How were proper procedures followed, for instance? Were people assessed before they were demoted? Because those are the questions that we need the fiscal management to talk to us about. And we also understand that in terms of the executive management, there's only one side story also there. I think to follow this on the, what the issues that we raised. In some instances, we find that the majority of the people are not from the mesh entity. And to sum up, then the issue of knowledge management, it might not be an issue because it might be wanting to transfer, as the Minister has already indicated, wrong knowledge into the new institution. That can be understood. But what is critical also is the knowledge in terms of the areas that we're working on, especially around the strategies and so forth. But then we'll await the presentation from CIFA to hear. But Minister, on issues that perhaps you'd want to draw on in future, would be the different role that government as a funder would play against the role that commercial banks would play. I think we would in future want to hear your stance on that so that we can begin to understand the intervention that the government is playing to the Africa. As you actually said that the state has to take quite a substantial chunk of risk, you know, on behalf of the people themselves. And the other questions we'll be asking, especially going forward, in terms when we understand, you know, the workings between CIFA, ICC, ICC departments. The reporting, how do we report, you know, who do we actually ask for further information, whether it's from the department, from the ICC, from CIFA, what do we require from CIFA, what do we require from the ICC and the department. So I know the department is there are of that information, ultimately, but where we want to get the right info, where we go to. And also the question related to the other module, intermediary module. Considering the question I was asking was mainly because those associations or those bodies, they represent, you know, members, meaning that those who are not members are going to be disadvantaged. How are you going to operate them then in terms of lending and so forth? I understand that there will be this parallel, you know, intermediary, while you check on this and on the new module, you're still going to continue the old one. But remember, the old one, a complaint of interest. I well understand the Minister talking about sometimes we have to work on the work that the CIFA is doing in terms of determining the effective cost of lending, in as far as what the current intermediaries are doing. But the fact of the matter is, the process continues, and those habits are continuing. How are we going to safeguard that for the emerging, you know, entrepreneurs that want to also drink from the well where everybody is drinking from. I think those are some of the questions that do not need to be answered now, Mr. Berzov, but as time goes on, we want to get some of those being answered. But I think also FIFA might also try to answer them. Without further waste of time, Minister, if you want to release, you are welcome to do so. You can indicate, and then we will allow you to do so. We have invited I'm worried about time. We have listened to FIFA in the last meeting where we were invited by the select committee. Would want to engage with FIFA thoroughly, and we at the same time want to hear what Empowered says, because it's sometimes mostly talking to the issues that we're talking to around the small medium enterprise development progress. How are we faring? How are we doing like economic empowerment issues and so forth. So I don't know, because as I speak it's already 25 past, my watch says it's 25 past 11. Meaning that we have to limit FIFA a lot. We might have to call you back for follow up, especially in terms of responses and so forth. We have to take Empowered because it's coming for the second time, not the follow up also. So I think time will tell. One mention in this is because I don't want any of you to feel that you're not special. You're very special. We hold you here because we believe in the work that you're doing. That's why we called you here. But unfortunately, time it is against us. What we get from the minister was supposed to hear, because it's not very, you know, often that we have the minister with us. May I then, that note, request that we have just a 3 minute council break. When we come back, we will then hear from the chairperson of FIFA and then the CEO of the minister in the case. Are you opposing what I'm saying? Okay.
I just want to apologize to the meeting that I'm not feeling very well, so I'm slightly dosed sometimes due to medication. Not disrespect, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Prof. Mabasa, for that. May we then have that conversation, right? these people who come in or what? Members, please come in. Thank you for coming back. I think Empowerment has been so kind, the network has been so kind to give us, he hasn't mind to come back for the presentation. Seeing that we have really good time to give us the best to them and the interest on the presentation. So thank you very much. May we now hand over to the CEO or the chairperson? Who's coming first? The chairperson, okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Honorable Minister. Thank you for accompanying us. I must say, it's always a pleasure to sit in the committee's meeting. Because I think in the process of the questions, we get constructive comments that we can also use to improve on some of the things that we are doing in our approach. So we truly appreciate the comments that come. The CEO is going to do the presentation, Chair, but I thought I should just touch on three high-level issues. The first one, Chair, is your question around the new crop, as I call it, the new crop of intermediaries. I think the Minister had already indicated it is critical for CIPA to partner with organizations. Importantly, intermediaries, we see them as partners that have local knowledge of SMEs in the environment that they operate in, that would be costly for CIPA to establish an office and get to fully understand the local environment in the shortest possible time so that small businesses can serve it. But intermediaries are closer to the local communities we work with. They understand them better, and they are there on an ongoing basis. It's supposed to be at a lower cost to do so. And so the issue of fees that was raised that they charge becomes an important factor that we have to deal with. I think in our interaction with the intermediaries, we always stress that we partner with intermediaries that share our developmental objectives. I think the CEO talks to that in detail. However, in testing this new crop, there are two reasons we have to do that. We have to say, how do we get closer to the small businesses that we actually service? And the second was, how do we make sure that in difficult economic conditions, when all institutions and businesses incur losses, how do we minimize the losses getting incurred by private people? In other words, we may lose the money to private pockets. And so this new crop is really trying to address those two issues. In partnering with business chambers, we are partnering with associations of small businesses. And so small businesses themselves keep the chamber accountable. The way the governance cluster would work, Chair, in addressing your concern, is that the chambers will, by the way, this particular structure has got three different chambers, which is NACOC, FACOC, and Black Business Council. And it addresses your question, Chair, on does it mean if I'm not a member of a chamber, I will not get a loan from the structure? The question is no. All small businesses. But what we did was to try and bring into the partnership a broad base of the associations. Amongst these three associations, there will be a trust, and CIFA will also be a member of the trust. And there will be also two independent trustees who are independent of CIFA and the chamber. And that trust will be responsible for running the lending arm of the fund. So we try to make sure that we establish a governance structure that does not favor one chamber over the other, so that all small businesses, regardless of association, they also can benefit. There's another benefit we see in partnering with chambers. At the micro level, there's a methodology that's called your group lending, where the members of the group put pressure. We also think that this is possible at the small business level who are members of the chambers, because each chamber would at least make an effort when any of its members is actually defaulting on their own. So we're looking at using all those strategies to ensure that this becomes the most efficient approach. As the Minister suggested, we will continue side by side with the intermediaries we've been working with, and in the process we will work out what works best and try to draw the best lessons from all. And the CEO will probably talk a bit more on the detail. So the second area I would like to talk about is the direct lending. I think one of the critical, I won't call it failures, but one of the critical challenges for both Farmers and Kula when they were standalone, because they were established as wholesale institutions, was that they were not interacting with small businesses directly. After some time of not interacting with your customer directly, you no longer know exactly how to respond effectively to your customer. I think that was one of the biggest challenges. And with CIFA now also using the direct lending methodology, it means we continuously interact with small businesses directly. And in a way that will also empower us on how we monitor even the intermediaries that we also work with. And so I think that drawing from the lessons on the direct lending, we will also improve the wholesale side of our business. However, considering that both Kula and Summit were always wholesale institutions, it suggests that your staff, the skills that your staff have, your skill base within SIFA is actually more of the wholesale lending and less of the direct lending. And I would suggest also here that that may be one of the reasons your summer staff are complaining, but it applied also to the Kula staff. That means we have to do a lot of training, which has already taken place and ongoing. IPC has been very helpful in assisting with the training. So staff are being reskilled, retrained to ensure that their skills are relevant also to the direct lending. And so to a great extent, although we've achieved much more than what Kula ever achieved, we still lag a little behind our target. But we are confident that with a lot of training, there is no doubt that we'll be accelerating the achievement of the target. But having said that, we still have done much better than what was done under Kula and Summit combined when they were separate. I also want to talk a little bit on the question of co-ops. I'm tempted just to make one statement. We took a step back to say the way Summit was financing the co-ops is not necessarily the best in terms of our mandate. Now that may be another area where the staff of the former Summit who were, for example, responsible for the co-ops may feel that they are not being integrated in the way that they've always worked. Because our new strategy, which is under construction, is that there are many co-ops out there that are enterprise co-ops instead of the financial services co-ops. Because some have used to work with the financial services co-ops that are mainly savings organizations rather than enterprise lending organizations. And our view is that we want to work with co-ops such as your bread co-ops, you know, many co-ops that exist out there that are enterprises, because we can then do the lending. We have ongoing discussions with DTI because there's this new initiative of the Cooperative Development Agency. In fact, we've reached certain agreements with the DTI on how we will phase out into the new institution the saving co-ops and retain the enterprise co-ops for lending purposes. I think the last area I would like to touch on is that of partnerships with the private sector. In everything we do, we remain cognizant of the fact that banks have got huge capital that could be released to small businesses. We also believe that the opportunities, as was mentioned by the Minister, within the infrastructure development program, especially in the parastatals, there are a lot of opportunities for small businesses. And so we are working very hard to make sure that the partnerships with the private sector are enhanced, become stronger, and benefit. We believe that we cannot ignore the national footprint that the banks in particular have in the country and that the post office will and the post bank will have. And so we're working very hard to work on strategies on how do we make sure that the private sector is actively involved in the development of small businesses. We particularly have identified that in terms of the BEE code, the enterprise, the corporates are required to have an enterprise development spend. And a whole lot of companies have a big budget on this enterprise development. And we are looking at partnering with a number of them so that it can be directed direct to small business, because at the moment there's a huge industry of consultants who are consulting for the companies. But if we can actually absorb that money so that it goes directly to small businesses, I think the impact would be much higher than it is at the moment. Without taking the limelight from the CEO's presentation, Chair, I think I will end there and stress that we really appreciate the comments that come from the floor, because they help us to improve what we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. May we hand over to the CEO.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, and my colleagues from EDG and CIFA. My presentation, as you have seen, there is a detailed presentation that has been provided. I'll try to be as brief as possible, because the detail is in the presentation. I will highlight particularly on the issues around human capital, our main thought within the institution, as well as a brief on the performance today. What I can begin by saying, Honourable Chairperson, is that CIFA is in business. There have been a number of challenges around the merger, where two institutions were met, different cultures being brought together. Now I can clearly say that now we are beginning to find alignment amongst ourselves. CIFA has moved into all the employees of CIFA have moved into the new offices at the end of October. And that has resulted in a level of increased cohesion, because we are now working under one group, following the measure of the previous institutions. One of the key activities from the human capital perspective that we've been engaging with was the issue around the organized labor. As you may be aware, our labor force is unionized, and as a result of that, we need to be able to respect the protocol and engage in such a way that no, the aspirations of our members, of our employees, are realized in so far as the merger is concerned. As the Minister has indicated, in any merger situation, there will always be that feeling that the merger might not be benefiting one area, maybe benefiting one part than the other. So what we have been doing as management is to try to make sure that now every member of staff feel that now you belong to the new CIFA. And as a result, we have tried to eradicate any symbol that relates without raising the history of ex-Samas and ex-Kula. We have taken this note, any symbol that reflects the one entity that might be seen to be dominating than the other, we try to eliminate, so the rest will focus on the new, a new identity as a CIFA. So what actually happened was now, the employees, as I indicated, they moved into the new institution, the new building, new office, end of October, and we then embarked in terms of how can we be able to match and place the employees through constructive engagement with our staff to ensure that now, since the previous institutions were doing business model different from what new CIFA is doing, particularly directly, how can we then deploy constructively to mend the activities expected from the new direct lending activities within CIFA. So that process is culminated in us having to match the significant portion of our staff being met and placed into new positions within the new structure. We have issued letters to staff in terms of the transfer to the new entity, which took place in October, there have been some challenges in respect to the understanding. I think the issue that was raised by Honorable Julie around the perception of demotion, which one would say that no, it's not entirely the case. I can give an example. If an employee, for instance, came from the orphan and the title was director, and now we are with the new CFA and the title is investment officer or senior investment officer. Because we do not have a title within the CFA structure as a director, it can be construed as that now the level or the title that I'm having in the new institution is construed as it is of a lower standard than the previous standard. It's just that we do not have within our structure a director position. I'm just giving that as an illustration. But there's no really demotion. What we're doing as management is just try to communicate that. Because coming from a previous institution, there's always the perception that, no, is this role that I'm playing better off from where I was previously? In terms of the collective agreement, Madam Chairperson, it was agreed that no one would move into a new institution at a level below what one was previously. In fact, if ever, it has to be a better than what it was. So what we need to do and what we continue to do as management is to ensure that now the levels in terms of the titles that we have in the structure are equally significant as what people occupy in the previous institution. I just thought maybe I should emphasize in that respect. In terms of the appointment in various structures, we did have a protracted engagement with labor through our ED chamber, which although there have been some challenges in that regard, we have engaged with staff to make them understand where this organization is going, the role the organization is expected to play, the mandate of CIFA, and it is itself that we need, while we are managing the issues around the content that staff are having, we also need to make sure that we progress further in terms of our mandate. And we are trying to make the progress move parallel. And as a result of that, I've issued a letter of appointment placement and meeting the end of last month, and then after consultative process with the staff. And as a result, we have received a positive response today in terms of the confirmation of appointment in various positions in line with the new cycle from our employees. In so far as the executive management is concerned, I should really say, Honourable Chairperson, that you did indicate on the executive management whether the same management that were in the previous institutions are for continuity, knowledge management, we still have those in the institution. Significant number of management of the previous institution have moved on by choice in terms of their growth, in terms of their career, and not because they don't necessarily want to be formed part of the new people. So at executive level, we do have new breeds that come from outside the organization. But at the same time, we do have colleagues that are pipelined to move into the executive position of FIFA going forward as a way of succession. The critical position of executive director, Doug Lending, is still outstanding, and we are looking at filling this position as soon as possible, as soon as we identify a suitable candidate. It's crucial for FIFA. We've been doing a number of search through enhancing other activities to make sure that that area is improved going forward. The other outstanding position is for the CRO, Chief Risk Officer, which is critical as the role of CIFA is to provide access to finance to various small businesses. We also need to manage risk for us to be able to be sustainable as an institution. We are conducting interviews with Mr. Chatterton tomorrow for the position of the CRO. We hope soon we'll be able to fill the position. And as a result of that, our executive management, we hope that no, we will have fully filled positions that are critical for this organization to succeed in its own in its mandate. One of the activities that we have been doing over the years, as the chairperson has indicated, is to upskill and train our workers. As you are fully aware, the previous institution was overweight on wholesale lending. Now we are doing the direct lending, although it started during the Kula pilot program. We feel that now our staff needs to be upskilled. In other words, when they go out there and identify this project that needs to be funded, they need to have the necessary skills and capability to assess and make those transactions into a bankable transaction. By and large, the typical business plans and business profiles that come our way need nurturing. And we need to make sure that not our team is ready to make sure that not they can nurture those business plans from an area where it's not bankable to a bankable transaction, so that we then provide access to finance to small businesses. So the training has been conducted, including the services that we receive from other service providers. Our shareholder, the IGC, has played a significant role in making sure that no, our team is trained from time to time to make sure that no, they are ready to deliver on our mandate. So I just thought maybe let me really highlight those areas related to the human capital that are crucial for this institution to achieve its objective going forward. If I can just briefly dwell in this slide, but this slide basically covers the entire framework of FIFA. I'm not necessarily to go through other individual slides. I will remain slide for a moment, Honorable Chairperson, just to indicate what we do at FIFA. Because the request is that we need to give a corporate plan of FIFA in this presentation today, so I thought maybe I will really base on that slide. As indicated earlier, our ultimate customer is the end user, small businesses out there. We do that by applying a number of ways, number of channels to ensure that no, we reach these small businesses. One area, it has been mentioned on a number of occasions, is the wholesale lending mechanism as well as the direct lending. How do we make sure that no client or potential client will ensure that no, they have access to funding from this? We are saying that no, we can't be able to do that on our own. We then engage with various channels. There are other development finance institutions that are based provincially in the country. We are saying as people that no, we'll use those in partnership with provincial DFI as a way of us able to channel the activities of FIFA in small businesses. So as the post office and the post bank, once you become operational as a minister, as indicated. In terms of the products that we offer at FIFA, currently we are by and large offering the loan instrument as opposed to the equity instrument. So in terms of the direct lending product, for instance, we provide loan for working capital, bridging finance. By and large, the bridging finance is one of the critical areas where small businesses get contracts, for example, from government, and they need to deliver on those contracts. And they don't have resources available, and they can't see for providing bridging and facilities so that they can be able to execute the task. And then when the money comes from government institutions, they will then repay the facility that has been provided by FIFA. Let me, Honorable Chairperson, move to the slide where we talk about the deliverable. Slide number, I'll pass the slide. Let's go to slide number 33 on the printer. So I just want to highlight what we have done today. And the Minister did mention that now those numbers indeed need to be stressed. What we're going to do, Minister, before the end of the financial year, we will institute the service of internal audit to interrogate these numbers. Because some of the numbers in terms of the locations, they emanate from various sources, in particular the intermediaries, where we provide funding to them, they would then do their own lending to small business. And then they send us information to see on a regular basis, and we take that information for reporting purposes. But I think it would be critical to ensure that the integrity of the information that we have needs to be stressed, needs to be audited, to make sure that at least the numbers that we present are accurate, and the measurement that we are using from time to time is a fair measurement. So we'll continue to look at those numbers. And if you look at what we have based on the model that we apply currently, you could see that yes, indeed, we have made a lot of inroads in terms of activities, both in terms of the narrow SME finance, particularly at the wholesale space, as compared to the previous two institutions combined, as well as job creators and job trustees. And then we believe that we have contributed significantly under the circumstances to those achievements to date. If we can move now to slide number 87. This slide indicates the approval and disbursement to date for SIFA as compared to the previous two institutions. The approval to date amounts to just under 450 million. The target for SIFA in terms of approval for the year ending this month is 560 million. Under all the challenges that we have faced as an institution in terms of making sure that we need to upscale, we need to make sure that our team is trained to be able to do their activities, we still manage to achieve those numbers. I think it would be fair to indicate that now, out of the 445 million, there's an amount of about 190 million, which has been approved by the board subcommittee. And then I'm facing the board tomorrow, and then I hope the board will agree with the recommendation by the board committee to make sure that none of those transactions are approved. So I suppose maybe it's pushed out, and maybe I mentioned what is included on the 445 million. In terms of the investment, 150 million, this number changed as it has already changed, but I don't think that I for me to mention at this stage. It has improved significantly from the 150 million in terms of the activities that we move along. So there is a significant improvement in the investment as compared to the previous two institutions combined. However, I still have to say that it's not significant enough as compared to what is expected from the target. We have a target of investment of about 450 million. We have done 150. A reason for lower investment, there are a number of reasons why the investment. If one has to compare the ratio of investment vis-à-vis the approvals, there are a number of challenges. One of them, as you mentioned, is conditions precedent. For example, you have put some conditionalities that are not very stringent, but no. ABC has to be fulfilled before the disbursement is made. But other conditions are those that are outside our environment, where we engage, for instance, in other organs of state. I can give you a particular example. Let's say we have got a client who has received a contract from the Department of Health, the National Department. And then ask for SIFA to be able to safeguard in the interest of SIFA and the client to say that no, we require an opening of a joint bank account. So that when the money comes from the government department, it goes into the joint bank account. But we say that no, in order for the client, because human being is human being, in order for the client not to go and change bank account willingly at any given time, we'll then indicate that no, we need to have an undertaking from a government department not to allow the client to change the banking account without SIFA consent. And in that respect, we tend to get a number of challenges where some departments of state will say, our internal policy doesn't allow us to provide this undertaking to that party. I think for us the challenge is that now, as SIFA, part of the bigger government agency, how can we collaborate with other government departments to see that now, what SIFA is trying to achieve is the achievement towards the goal of the broader government objective. So we are engaging with the government departments so that when SIFA is a condition like that, it should not be an impediment to plan for us to increase the level of SIFA. So I just submitted to you that some of the challenges regarding the area of investment where the condition cannot be able to fulfill because there might be some red tape that are sitting within the organs of state which we're trying to resolve that with engagement through our administrative order, ED, and collaborating with the national treasurer. Then next slide is basically just to spread the approvals and investment profits to the province. You can see that now we have added the last column there, Honorable Jefferson, just to align with what we have on the previous slide. The performance in terms of approvals and investment post-quarter three, except the provincial spread, is not yet on the analysis that we have. And we have just added at the bottom the quarter four to date. Perhaps we move to slide number 42, which talks about the funds, and we call it NFF funds, SIFA, NAFCOP, PAPCOP. And a lot has been said on this fund, both by the chairperson of SIFA board as well as by the minister. But I just want to highlight a few things that came across the question. I think the chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, did raise whether there will be any exclusivity in terms of the access to finance from their funds only to the members of those chambers. We have made it categorically that now at SIFA, we only get involved in this only and only when it's open to all small business. And then our partner, NAFCOP and FAFCOP subscribe to let us know SIFA's involvement is indeed based on openness of the funds or who will not have participated in this fund if it was exclusively for the members of the particular chamber. We have made a lot of inroads in this fund. We have, although not formally, but appointed the fund manager. If you see that now we want to appoint the fund manager, for instance, by the end of February, which we have done. But however, we are putting conditionalities to the fund manager that we have identified to make sure that now the fund manager has three credentials. Technically, very, very strong and sound, and it aligned with the mandate, and they participated in the activities of providing access funding to managing funding provided to small businesses. But we are saying, as SIFA, together with our partners, we need to make sure that no, that fund also aligns with the broader BE perspective. And then the challenge that we have under some of them we're engaging with them, and we hope that now we'll be able to resolve those outstanding matters as quickly as possible so that we can be able to roll out the plan by March, if not in early April. And I would like just to go, I'm trying to move as because of the detail outline, I just want to give a visual of some of the activities of the intermediaries. The chairperson has indicated that now, while currently we're going to be going parallel with the new game changer in terms of us using intermediaries in the form of entities or activities or partnerships we have with the likes of FAPCOP, NAFCOP and other members, we will still continue to use the current model and then continue to assess its effectiveness because it's clear that we do not want to see the ultimate small business being exploited elsewhere. be that in terms of competent interest that might be charged, as well as the service that is provided. So we believe that now, if you look on the top left hand corner, I just want to mention in terms of the microclimate, how the model works, where the groups, particularly in the rural area, they meet from time to time, they get the funding from an intermediary as a group, although each member is jointly and several liable. This model, in terms of the collection perspective, is very, very effective. They collaborate. If one member, for whatever reason, fails to pay on any responsibility in terms of paying back the provider of finance, they group together and then try to find a way of ensuring that that member do pay. The collection rate, by and large, in this space is significantly high. I mean, while there's a perception that unsecured lending is risky, but this group of people, they do pay, which is crucial to make sure that actually they can be able to go back from time to time and borrow for them to be able to sustain their small businesses in the survivalist state. Some of them, they are getting funding to do, for example, construction, repair of roads. Some of them are in cement manufacturing. Some of them are in the agricultural space. So this is what they give you a preamble of some of the intermediaries that we engage with are doing. I would like to move to slide number 49, just on the direct lending side. I want to emphasize that this slide, basically, it is on the direct lending. It's not a global, not necessarily the consolidated slide for both wholesale and direct lending combined. We say that as a development finance institution, we need to make sure that our funding that we provide to small businesses have to go to certain targeted groups to make sure that this group gets access to funding from people. For instance, on the direct lending side, the target is the aim for on a consolidated basis in terms of the target or percentage of measurement. But however, they achieve. This specifically relates to direct lending. So facility is best used on businesses, small businesses, which I guess 30%. Yes, it is 32%. Yes, that means until the end of December. These figures might change at year end. Maybe I just want to emphasize on the second one that talks about rural-based SME. If I can indulge, let's make honorable chairperson. The achievement in that area is significantly lower than the target that we have set ourselves on the direct link. Reason being, when I saw the previous slide, where intermediaries are particularly more involved or more being the role play, intermediaries, especially the microfinance intermediaries, play by and large in the rural area. The direct lending, as we are still rolling out this program, it is fair to say that we have not made a significant change in what we expected to do as before. There is significant room for improvement. There are a number of reasons why we have not achieved what we set ourselves to achieve, simply being the area of upskilling that we devote a lot of time to ensure that we upskill our team so that they are ready to roll out the direct lending program. And we set ourselves that we need to be able to increase our activities significantly in that area going forward. So I just thought maybe I should highlight on that. And then, where are we? Direct lending is the area where we are far behind in terms of performance. Let's even go to slide number 50. Yesterday, in terms of approval, we ran 90 million direct lending Our target for direct lending is 185 million. We hope that we will do our utmost that under the circumstances in the remaining few weeks of the financial year to make sure that now we convert the deal pipeline that you see on slide 60 into bankable transfers. We have placed a number of interventions. That include hiring the experienced deal makers who are unemployed but have a lot of experience from banking sector to be able to come in with on a certain basis with the intention to put them permanent on board to help us on day one to convert the deal pipeline into bankable transactions. And we've done that. And then we hope that no, we will put in the same road in making sure that this pipeline is converted. We are also engaging with our shareholders, the IEC, to provide us with the resources, competent, experienced account managers, deal makers within the IEC to help us to improve the performance in the area of direct lending. I just want to end, Honorable Chairperson, by going to slide 59, exactly. Just briefly highlight why we might have to set a roadshow. The Minister has given us, when we engaged recently, tight deadlines to make sure that no CIBA is known. We are fully aware as management that honourable members do visit the constituencies on a regular basis and they engage with people on the ground. And yes, we know that in certain areas it said that yes, CIBA is not making inroads, we are visible. However, in addition to what the Minister said, or has given us a milestone achieved going forward, we have also engaged and participated in a number of workshops in collaboration with other institutions. So this few slides is just to highlight some of the activities that we have done where we had the opportunity as CIBA to present our case, our business proposition, our offer. We utilize this forum to make sure that now we present our case. Let me end by saying that now we do have slide number 65. We do have a footprint in all provinces. In other words, we basically have 11 regional offices, with two of them that we need to amalgamate that are based in the Western Cape as well as the Northwest. We need to make sure that we have one regional office, one regional manager. However, for us to be able to really make a dent, a critical mass, we need to have a footprint across the length and breadth of our country. And as a result of that, as mentioned by the Minister, we are collaborating with CEDA, we will be collaborating with the Post Office and the Core Bank. We are engaging on a regular basis with different finance institutions in the provinces to make sure that we have a footprint or we have a presence in those provinces. It might not necessarily be a fully fledged office, because when you have a fully fledged office, there's a cost associated with it. But even if it's a desk, a satellite office in a branch of CEDA, in a branch of a provincial development institution, so that our end users, the small businesses out there, can be able to have access to finance. So I think maybe the presentation is too broad. Those will be the highlights out of the presentation. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, people. There's the presentation. You've used some acronyms here, and I think it's important because sometimes we wonder with you when when we revisit the document, we need to understand I think from acronym, not a synchronous. That's number one. Number two, I think that in terms of the HR issues, before members come in with questions, I think you need to send us an account of how you incorporated the two entities. Actually, the three, because they are three into one. With clear indication as to who comes, what number comes from where. But that's really important for our own records also and for reporting. If we encounter any problems, we are able to, or any questions, we are able to respond. yeah, that would be the request that would come from the university that is concerned. Members, here is the presentation. Can you take with it? Someone is administrative point. Now we can go in anywhere we want administrative policy. Fine. Ndadengwe Nyama, Ndadengwe, Ndadengwe.
Well, the person I'll go my thanks to my favorite. And item which the minister and identified as well as one of the most important areas, and the equitable distribution. It is very clear even now at stage that FIFA is lopsided or is biased towards housing in particular. I must be honest, Southern is part of South Africa. We rejoice and their only success. But we know for a fact that we are actually flooding resources in an area where there are so many resources. And in my view, it's we can't judge beyond the digital success of our Southern Twitter. Any reasonable person cannot monitor FIFA on the basis of their distribution to Gauteng. Because Gauteng is well developed in terms of infrastructure. It has got a number of other competing resources. But in far-flung areas, for instance here, if we take an example of rural areas, it is clear that rural areas, even now, they are going to suffer. Even at this early stage, Chairperson, I must actually say definitely that some of us, I talk now as a member and a responsible person, and they were supposed to have an oversight over this activity. I will make serious exception, and I am going to campaign very strongly, and therefore, distribution to run it. Because if you look at these finances here, mainly it's around housing. And I'm really very much content about this. That's why we're having the situation. And one of them is that's why we're having situations that are like Marikana. Because people are leaving that area because there's nothing. It's barren. We have ourselves ways of reaching out to try and activate activities in those areas so that people find a way of remaining in those areas. But we don't do it. I just want to raise that issue better than that. I appreciate the work that has been done, but to me, and it's definitely not meaning anything because we are not reaching out to where the need is. Thank you.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, Chairperson, may I just do that?
You can't ask the president here. Why were you asking? Maybe they need to clarify.
Okay. You must ask, that comment is, I think it's a response,
the way
you're
raising it, and
we
all want to hear.
Thank you, Jefferson. And this is just the command of the Lord God. And also can I say but to add, you say Rupta also has some pockets of Ugarism. So on the organizational level, listen to the page 6. It is not clear to me what you mean by permanent CEO with appointed or you to contracted CEO. And on page 7 about the marketing that is delayed due to improving internet capabilities. In our last engagement, previous engagement, we are under the impression that there won't be, you know, some sort of challenges in as far as this is concerned, because already the other people who are skilled were going to be met. And the other question, which was a serious challenge that came from time to time in the process of this engagement, which would be the major, like somehow restructuring, and the question was, is it not going to compromise? So I'm trying to skip other steps because I'm talking about the time. And page 10, the self-compliment.
So this is the minister. You, thank you very much, Minister. You're welcome.
On the self-compliment, it is also not clear as to what extent is transmitting or equality accommodated here. When you talk about the African in May 40 and female 91, if you can go to the same of saying out of this 40, not as a post level, like it is here below, but I didn't say clearly who is the in the executive and the management and who can maintain management and then professional. Sometimes when we have a class only, it is misleading. You find that you have so many Africans but in very low position. So if you get the motion extent of getting the actual, you know, host level to know who is where and also check the issues of gender. But recognition as it is. And page 11, on the negotiation for new conditions of employment, how would they differ from the current basic conditions of employment that you already have? So I'm trying to be brief. I have other questions, but I think Member Mbonyama has gone into details about the other concerns that I wanted to raise in terms of accommodating, you know, rural areas. But I also think in the transformation, I mean, in the economic cluster. So these are questions that come up from time to time, but you're not going to cover them.
Well, thanks, colleague. No, I think, well, I want to comment on the holding issue. That I think we should also ask ourselves and say, is the department well organized to serve South Africa in entirety? You know, so that the challenge should also be seen from that perspective. Because if we are not careful in practically responding to the concern, we may find that we still leave a pocket of poverty unattended because of the argument. I think the correct part of the argument is to say spread to all parts of South Africa, but the needs are everywhere. Then my question is on slide 49. I don't see people with disabilities. I was just curious. Aren't they fitting in that? Shouldn't they be there?
Thanks, Babu.
Yeah, thanks, Professor. Firstly, I wanted to put forward that the CIFA must understand that we had different provinces. Some of them, they are Bantustan, they were Bantustan area. They had their own Muranyana bands, like KwaZulu-Natal, Italy, which they operated a different way, just for the Mazulu government and with all that traditional thinking. They are still there, and they are just operating as if we don't have any dispensation, as if we don't have EPD, we don't have free fast letters, they put their own way of doing things. It's not only one, there are many, because some of the provinces, they've got the tendency of federalism, and they want to continue like that. Now I want to check, how do you take on these things? Do you just leave them as they are doing their own things, and you operate side by side, or you would like to interrate and we with those people? Because people will just ask us, but this new thing, how does it interact with Italy? Now we have to scratch your head in Italy, doing its own thing. And then here in the FIFA, how do you work with these entities which were there previously? Because if you look at the provincial government, they still feel independent with these entities and all these entities. Sometimes I was talking about FIFA, everybody in a provincial meeting, everybody said, what is FIFA now? How is FIFA related to Italy? You start saying, hey, I'm trying to highlight that there's a long way in the length.
Yes. I think the minister talked to that, connecting FIFA with all stakeholders, including public entities, all 3 years of government. Although he mentioned only the metro, we have also the district entities that also need to be taken on board, especially in provinces where there are no metros, there are only district councils. I think there's a woman, the old acknowledge the fact that there is a mention of action towards that, and one is encouraged by that. Thank you. Let them move. Thanks for
the question. Thank you, Chair. Just a short small question. The board, what's the life of the board in terms of how long it remains in office and who appoints it? And what criteria is used in appointing them to the board? And is this board, does it include members from the previous board or not? Thank you, Chair.
The demo, Minister was here. You were supposed to ask him. I think I did ask that question because the DG is here. We did ask that, but we had an opportunity to ask that question to the minister.
I will draw the question then.
He indicated that the board, I did ask the question on the afternoon. The board was selected by the cabinet, apparently. Well, I think the chairperson has to deal with the issue of the time frame. How long will it be there, or the issue? What is the lifespan of the sport? And the other issues that you raised. I take it that there are no more questions from other members. Okay. Can I then ask... I don't know. I'm looking at the stats. How credible are the stats? I just want to taking also from what the chairperson and the minister said earlier on,
but then sometimes we work on the figures based on info that was contested. That's why I'm asking, how then credible is this information? I'm on 49, I don't know whether I don't know if the person is in question, I didn't quite see, or no, he wasn't. I'm just trying to look at this figure. In terms of the targets achieved and the variance, well, that is understood in terms of the heading. So then, there is on 4, that is the column 4, under measure, on the same page 49. It's talking to facilities disbursed must be to black owned SMEs. What does that mean? Does it mean, are you trying to motivate on the above facilities, or are you talking to other facilities that are not part of? And if you are, would that then mean whatever is under this column represents the totality of what is above? That is my question. And there's something that doesn't make sense to me here. You know, the direct lending pilot were in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng, if I remember well. Yes. But then you look at the number under Eastern Cape, you look at the number under Gauteng. What does this mean? Does it mean what the Tema was saying earlier on in terms of capacity, concentration, or does it mean people are less interested in the services of SIFA in the Eastern Cape more than in the Gauteng? Or you haven't marketed them enough, the services enough, or the product enough in such a way that the accessibility becomes it's not a problem due to the fact that there's no need, but because people do not know how to access you. I think I just want to understand that, because there are processes where it is not pilot, but
you registered, you registered the substantial number. In terms of the approval and disbursement, Let me not ask that question. I had a question on the... Yeah, let me leave that one to later on. On the trust manager, if you want to share us who is, was the manager has already been appointed, do you want to share us with us as to who that is, or which company is? It's a company. You said it's a two person, if I remember well, that was the minister there. Two people that will be appointed, or is it different? Is this a management company, or is it a manager, an individual? Is it a company or an individual that is being appointed, and who are we talking about here? Because it should be a public meeting. Okay, on the other, I'm trying to follow the language of the chairperson here. The new crop of intermediaries. Yes, that's the language, chairperson. You know, it will be important to understand, because you're saying, the way I understand what you said, it's like you are sort of piloting, you know, this new crop of, you know, intermediary way of work. Because you are saying, you are just checking whether as to which one, for instance, works better. And you're going to continue with the model that is working better. That is the current, between the current one and this new one. How long is this trial, if I were to term it that way? How long is that, will be that trial? I think those would be the questions. You said the intermediary would be the NAFCO, FAFCO, and what? Come again? Black Business Council. Oh, God, BBC. Okay. Thank you. May I then hand over to the DG? You want to say something before?
Thank you. I thought that I could just deal with the board because I have a document in front of me that gives you the information that was requested, and we can lay it front to it, and then I can hand over to the chairperson and CEO. The board has 12 members that was appointed for 3 years from April 2012 to March 2015, subject to an annual review. For continuity purposes, the board that was established at that point took members from the Kula Book, from the Snowers Advisory Panel, and from IDC. For purposes of continuity, the board comprised members taken from the Kula Board, from the Summer Advisory Panel, and from the IDC. And then additional members who came from outside of those entities. The following factors were considered in appointing the board members: one, ability and experience in business and administration; two, suitability for appointment; three, continuity; four, a diversity of skills within the board; five, good corporate governance; and finally, national demographic representativity. I hope that that gives you a sense of how the board has been constituted and is a three-year period.
I thought the question on the constitution is fine, but I thought also he was referring to the procedure followed in appointing.
Okay, you were correct that this was an appointment process that got through the cabinet appointment process.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that provides enough.
No, we didn't get that. Fine.
Okay.
Chairperson, yes, you may come. Thank you. Thanks, Edition. You may come in, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think I'm just going to tackle one or two. And maybe first, let me admit guilt on our side on the issue of equitable distribution. The minister.
I just need to explain something. Yes, we are supposed to be finalizing, wrapping up things now. And just to explain why members had to leave, we have a debate today on the co-op. And three of our members are debating. That excludes the opposition. So please, the last member to leave now. I gave them permission because they had to do final preparations. So the last member would be Bamaba, so we'll be leaving us. Yeah. Because he's leading that debate as a person who is very, very vocal on all issues. And yes, Bamaba to leave us. Thank you.
I
think also, looking at time, I'm sorry, Chairperson, please, I know that the members would want to have lunch, their lunch before they go to the chamber for sitting. If we can wrap up, at least if you allow us, maybe just to step in and do just another five minutes for responses. Before we just be as short as possible, please. And taking that, you're still going to be engaging a lot on your work. Thank you. Thanks for understanding.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We certainly are happy to respond to some of the questions in writing so that there's a comprehensive response that the other members can also have an opportunity to look at. I was still commenting that, yes, we take the comment on the equitable distribution, and I must say the Minister has also brought us, put this to our attention a couple of times. We are working hard to make sure that this picture changes. So, yes, we will be putting much more effort on that. In terms of what you mean by permanent CEO, you may remember, Honourable Member, that we, when FIFA was launched, there was an interim CEO in the name of Willy Fury, who I think also attended a couple of meetings, who was seconded from IDC. And since the beginning of November, Mr. Makuba was appointed as the CEO, so Mr. Willy Fury had gone back to IDC. So I think that was what was meant by permanent CEO. I think one more area, Honorable, I would like to just comment on the marketing of what we are aware of is that we have not done marketing. And so the demand that is out there, we've not really responded to it effectively. However, the concern was, given the challenges that we were facing, some of them unexpectedly, especially in terms of the labor, you know, involvement, there were a number of delays in terms of integration and strengthening our systems, especially integrating the systems, building our systems. And our concern was, if we market today and 1,000 small businesses knock tomorrow for the service, we may not necessarily be able to respond effectively. However, we have since dealt with that, and hence the plan to actually have roadshow to the different provinces as one of the ways to market our program. So you'll actually be seeing an aggressive marketing program that will be rolled out beginning of April onwards to try and make sure that more small businesses know more about us and they know how to access the product. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll give over to the CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Maybe let me start by saying from the issue of equity in terms of the distribution across various provinces. I speak with authority in terms of understanding the challenges that small businesses are feeling in the deep rural areas. I mean, I for one am born and bred in the deep bundles of Venda, in the very, very rural area. You know the challenges that they face. So with a CEO in the realm who understands the challenges of small business, yes, we do have a target to invest 45% and going forward, but I think we need to make sure that as we improve our offering as an institution, we definitely have to make sure that it is seen clearly in the numbers that we have from time to time. We do not want to be seen to be biased towards provinces such as Gauteng. So we are working on that. And then with regard to the question raised on whether the major restructuring would compromise the talks, it was clear that no one will be compromised. No one will be really losing their role in terms of their working as an employee of CIFA. I think I was going to come to the one of the conditions of employment. I think those questions were raised. What we talk about is that we're going to need to have a condition of employment for the new entity. There are three entities involved. By and large, two entities. It's Summer and Cooler. Each has its condition of employment. So what we're trying to do is to have to consolidate and take from Summer, take from Cooler, and have one condition of employment for CIFA, because we have a two pieces of paper that we have to refer to all the time, but we can amalgamate those into CIFA. We will avoid, Honorable Chairperson, any potential consulting dismissal. We definitely want all countries in on board. We will do our utmost best to make sure that everybody feels part of the new institution. I think I will ask I think that it's hard, I think it's broad, it's just a matter of us engaging, and we engage, for example, with Mpumalanga Meta, and a development agency, we engage with them from time to time. And we need to improve engagement with the institutions such as Itala in the province. I think in relation to them, whether we can be able to collaborate, I think from the perspective of managing more collaboration, because any structural change in policy directive is outside the domain of this management. I would like to ask my colleague maybe just to briefly talk about the fund manager, Dennis.
If I may just add to be specific, Honorable Chair, for example, in terms of the coordination with the different institutions at the different spheres, for the relationship with Mpumalanga, in fact, not just dealing with them, we have an agreement that we have structured on how we work together, and we plan to take that agreement to the different provinces. Of course, Eastern Cape, for example, has indicated that they would like to work with us differently from how we work with Mpumalanga Mega. ECDC would want to work differently. And so we actually are systematically looking at forming the partnership so that there's formality on how we actually interact with each other. Honorable Chair, you also asked a question, sorry I forgot to address that, on the new crop of intermediaries. One, you could say it's a pilot because it's the first time we do it, but we're not planning to stop it. We just, from research, identified that it could be one of the most effective ways of working. So it doesn't have time frame, but we plan to make it work because we believe it is a better model than what we have for now. And we've also established and researched from other countries on how they structured it, and we believe it will be an effective model for us, even to reach rural areas, because NAFCOC, FACOS, they've got branches in the most rural towns, and we should be able to reach more with that. Thank you.
On that note, the fact that we call it a date for our meeting. Precisely because of the other issue. I think what one would want to request is that, because what you're saying and what we had earlier on differ. Because you said we had that step run in parallel, but then later on there was a review to check which model, you know, is preferable. I know there are questions that are not responded to. I was going to request that the lady responded in writing within 7 working days, directed to the Secretary of the PC, Mayor Kaka. That would help us, and then we will obviously be calling on the next meeting, where we're going to also be requesting for progress through DG, I think through the Minister's office. But then this response, we want the mission the next 7 days, so that members who want to ask follow-up questions can do so in writing, and they responded to in writing through the Minister of course. Yeah. I think, as I posted earlier on, that the AR issues, please forward them to us also, that if they can be included in the written responses. And the fund manager issue, and the rest of the issues. Methodist, what do you want to say? Wrapping up.
Yes, I was waiting there that after your wrap up. Yeah, I was just saying that we had a lot of questions. Maybe we should send a first one because for schedule more than one.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Yeah. Let's leave it there, and let me then use this opportunity to thank you very much for responding for our call in inviting you to the meeting, and not just doing that, but making sure that we have the necessary documents, and also being able to respond to our questions. We hope that this relationship will continue the way it is. Just want to emphasize, DG, that in all our meetings, we want to have documents submitted. At least, you know, because according to our rules, we're supposed to have them 7 days prior to. Sometimes our program doesn't permit us to inform you well in advance. But we've reached an agreement with the minister and the former FTDG that at least if the documents can reach us before 12 noon, actually on Thursday, sorry, because most members by 12 o'clock they are gone. Some of them, they don't even arrive at, you know, check their, well, teaching halls, yes, before, on Thursday. So if we can get them that time so that Thursday before 12 they get distributed, meaning that we should get them earlier than that. That's the Tuesday, that's the agreement that we've reached, I think, so that we alleviate this problem of getting documents in the meeting and having to read at the same time. Doesn't help members to, you know, effectively utilize this meeting time. So I hope you take that into consideration. That doesn't refer to today's time, but we did receive the document on time. You don't agree, but at least it was comfortable such a way. The fact that we did receive them before, we engaged with them in the select committee, it puts them in an advantage. So can we then agree that we'll be receiving those documents, every document before our engagement with yourself, with the entity concerned? Okay. Thank you very much for the attendance of the meeting and the participation members. The meeting stands adjourned.